Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, and welcome back to Directly Current. I'm your host, Max Patton, and on this installment, I'm sitting down with the CEO and founder of Electric Era, Quincy Lee. Electric Era is a startup that's doing something with fast charging. But before you get scared that they're going to go out of business, I think this one's going to be inspiring because, believe it or not, he's built a business that is not dependent on NEVI subsidies or any kind of special affordances. Not to say that we don't think those things are important here at the American EV Jobs Alliance, but we love self-sustaining businesses and people who are doing it right. And that's what Electric Era is trying. They're building hardware, they're building software, and they're building a deployment model that lets them put in these battery-backed high-tech charging stations at places like Costco. Yes, they have Costco as a client, as well as other retailers. They partnered with the National Association of Convenience Stores, who we have had on the show before. Go listen to it, episode 2. They have lots of upcoming clients, really exciting technology. They're charging, of course, every car in the market, Teslas, non-Teslas. They're integrating with route planning, the NACS port, all the fun stuff for you nerds. But more importantly, they're offering the site host, the retailer, a really rapid deployment. So they're going to install our charger for you very quickly. And they say they're very cost competitive, up there with the very best. And you can guess it, the very best is a company that starts with the letter T. Quincy is a super, super inspirational guy, amazing work ethic. And I really enjoyed this conversation with him. I think you will too. All right, Quincy Lee, CEO of Electric Era, thanks so much for coming on Directly Current. First off, just for listeners who may not be aware, you guys do a lot of interesting stuff, both with your hardware, your software, the service of deployment you do with your charger. So can you give everyone a rundown of what that looks like?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and just starting off, thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you and your audience. So for anybody that is not aware, Electric Era builds EV fast charging stations for predominantly fueling retailers. So we have a battery-backed EV fast charging station that can be installed in really any retail parking lot anywhere on the grid in as little as 3 months. And then once activated, it provides a really clean, great user experience, highly reliable, high uptime, just like a Tesla supercharging station that drivers love. We pride ourselves on ease of use, customer experience, and our high reliability and high per port uptime. So predominantly, those are the value propositions, you know, that you asked about earlier. We enable our customers to get to market faster with our, you know, battery-backed EV fast charging station technology, meaning they don't have to wait around for years to get a grid upgrade. And when they're active, the charging station is highly functional and provides a great driver experience. So this is why fueling retailers like Costco, Love's, and Giant Eagle have selected Electric Era as their partner to build out their EV fast charging stations across the country. And just at a high level, you know, we were founded in 2020. We have roughly 31 charging stations under contract, about 17 live right now. We oversee and operate about 80 DC fast charging stalls across America and are growing super fast. So excited to be here with you and talk more about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And people can check out those chargers on your website. One of the things I like about you guys a lot, in addition to just the nerdy fun stuff, the hardware, is that you guys make the integration of your chargers a key point, right? For so many people, this business is a commodity. It's like, okay, let's put in these, whatever, 200 kilowatt units we get off the shelf. And that's that. I mean, you guys focus on the experience, like the way that, you know, you'll list in all the directories so that a car will precondition its battery, like a Tesla, for instance, right? When you navigate to your chargers. I think it's those little things that are really nice and their touches of quality. A question I have, though, on this hardware, right? Like the battery back thing, that's an idea that some others have tried, right? FreeWire famously for us nerds, right? Tried this in the business and they fell on some hard times. So What are some of the things you guys are doing with your hardware that makes it unique and makes it scalable, like from a cost perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's three big approaches to using batteries in EV fast charging applications. The first is traditional peak shaving, where you install a full grid connection and then you have a battery. And when you are pulling load on the grid connection, the battery is discharging as much as it can and effectively lowering the demand charge, but you still have a big grid connection. So that's traditional peak shaving step or option one. And then there's kind of the free wire model where they had a battery inside of the charger where the battery was connected in serial to the grid and in between the car and the grid. And what this means is when you show up to a charging station, the battery has to stop charging from the grid and instead discharge into the battery. And that means you can't use the grid and the battery at the same time to discharge into the car. This means you basically have a more expensive CapEx infrastructure, a more expensive approach to serve less cars per day because you can't use the grid and the battery at the same time. Now, enter option number three, electric aero's battery back, actually patented, literally, battery back EV fast charging solution, where we install a much smaller grid connection and a battery in parallel to all of the cars, and the grid comes in with the battery power, and it kind of mixes in a shared pool of power to feed the aggregate load of the whole site. Mm-hmm. It means we can use a bunch of grid connection and the battery in conjunction with one another to serve a much higher amount of cars per day at a mm-hmm. lower amount of kilowatt hours, with a smaller amount of kilowatt hours. Now, this is quite hard to do because you have to have kind of a software dynamic load management system operating the grid, the batteries, the chargers, all in real time so that you never overload the grid connection or overload the cars. Everything has to be perfectly matched. So this is actually a patented approach. It's option number three. And we roll that out all over the country at our charging stations.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. And it's a lot of secret sauce, obviously, like you just described, that makes that work. And then you mentioned earlier some of your, you know, early customers like Costco as a station with you guys in Washington, and you have some other retailers on board. So for a retailer, like, what's the benefit of, you know, I guess it is hard, right, shopping around EV chargers, but you've got ChargePoint, you've got, I guess, EV, you've got other companies in the space, right? What's the benefit of them coming to someone like you for fulfilling that need on their lot?
Well, I think one of the reasons, well, I would say there's four big reasons. The first is the vertical integration that you mentioned earlier. We're like the one neck stroke. You don't have to go and chase down eight vendors when you're installing your charging station. You just talk to Electric Aero, and that makes your life way easier. And it actually also leads to faster time to market just from, you know, basic project management perspectives, because you're not chasing 10 different people and you're just working with one party. That one party can move a lot faster, and therefore you can move a lot faster. So vertical integration is one. The fact that we can lower the grid connection, get you installed faster, and lower your energy bills as a result is a big reason. That's a huge reason, you know, Costco's and others work with us. We operate the charging stations super reliably, so the drivers love us. We have like a 96% review on PlugShare, which is, you know, really high. Like nobody has that across all of our stations. And it actually keeps getting better as we scale. So we have this like autonomous software system that is monitoring our charging stations and actually operating them autonomously in the field. So if weird things happen, our software can detect it and fix it before we notice or the driver notices. And that's a big part of how we actually make our charging stations so reliable in a way that drivers love them. And then finally, you know, especially for retailer customers, they really care about creating a long-term relationship with the driver. So we can help them put things like loyalty programs on the charging screen so that drivers can show up and earn points for charging with them. And buy that in the store on a discount for a pizza, or at the pump or the port rather, on a reduced dollar per kilowatt hour basis. So that like fourth layer is quite powerful, no pun intended. And another big reason that people come to us and want to buy Electric Aero charging stations.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it makes, in hindsight, it seemed kind of silly that, like, the experience I think many EV drivers listening to this will be used to is, like, you go to a Walmart Electrify America charging station, and it's a completely separate account system than Walmart, right? I mean, Walmart's going their own way with charging now, but it's its own thing. And it's oftentimes it's not the best user experience. You look at PlugShare, you talk to lots of people. So having a base ability, right? Someone just taps their card and it works. I mean, that's the experience at a minimum that I think we expect. And like you said, Tesla's made that work with their plug and charge they've integrated on their vehicles. You know, at a base level, that's amazing. But then, yeah, offering the retailers the customization It just seems like a big value add, because if you're going to post this thing on your site, you hope that customers are going to, you know, maybe come into the store and have an incentive to shop around or do whatever it is they're going to do at your lot.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned a really important concept, which is like, what does the driver want? We really honestly think of the driver as our true north. That's like actually one of Tesla's old mottos on the Tesla supercharging team. They always talked about like, you know, the driver is your North Star. Like, what's the best for the driver? It's a good charging station for the driver. That model and that approach really doesn't exist in a lot of other OEMs, in my experience. Yeah. One of the ways it manifests internally is the tap to pay solution. Like, we talked to tons of drivers and they all said they hated using apps.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, well, why are people using apps? And it turned out it's because the payment terminal tap to pay solutions in the industry are so bad that it kind of pushed all the drivers onto the apps because it was a higher success rate for payments transaction. So we built our own payment software to basically solve that. And we actually have like 94 nines of reliability. So 99.99% of reliability for payments so that a driver can show up, plug in and tap any sort of payment terminal, Samsung Pay, Apple Pay, Google Pay, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, any of those. And it works like all the time. And that's just one example of how we like to think about things from the perspective of the driver. And, you know, being electric drivers ourselves, that's like a good way for us to figure out what products to build. And one of the cool new products that we're building now, we're in the early R&D stages of, is called Retailer AI. This is a AI agent that is on our charging station that can provide a voice activated and intelligent user interface to the driver when they show up. That way, when the driver shows up in a random location and they're on a road trip, they can just literally ask the Retailer AI, you know, what's around? What offerings are there? Is there good bathrooms in the store? Is there a park for my dog next so I can walk it while I'm charging up? How do I charge my car? Does this charging station use the CCS chip? I have a Tesla. It's a 2019 model. Will it work here? Anything and everything the driver wants to ask as it pertains to charging, shopping, or exploring, Retailer AI will be able to do that. And so this is another step in the right direction of convenience and seamlessness to make the driver's experience better and more, you know, enjoyable. And then therefore more people will drive EVs and, you know, we can help decarbonize the planet, which I think is a net good thing.
Yeah, no, that's a really valuable thing there is, you know, I want to touch on the first thing you said or earlier, but a lot of people at the company, including yourself, are electric drivers. I think that makes a big difference from the experience the customer gets, as we've seen in the industry. I mean, there are companies where I feel like that's not the case and it kind of shows. But also the idea of like, it is honestly pretty complicated for a normal person, especially now in this kind of intermediary period where we are, where there's both the CCS and the NACS, whatever you want to call it, standard, right? I mean, they're technically the same communication, but two different ports, you need an adapter. Not all vehicles work on all of them. And so like having a kind of information resource built in makes a lot of sense. I mean, for some of the people listening to this, maybe that's familiar knowledge for them. I think for a lot of people, it isn't. And I've seen no shortage of people at charging stations who are really confused about a lot of things, like the fact that, oh, why does it take so long past 80% to charge my battery?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. That feels like a great opportunity for you guys to fill a gap there with information.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And people might not realize it with being in our EV bubble, but basically nobody drives EVs yet. You know, we're super early on in the adoption curve. Like I think we hit, you know, net 7% new sales. It was like 7.5 of new car sales were EVs last year, but that doesn't necessarily show how many people are actively driving them in the US. I think it's a lower number than that. I don't know it off the top of my head, but I suspect it's lower. But that still means like 93% of people haven't ever had a charging experience, which is very different, a very different ownership model than an ICE vehicle. You know, we just want to help make it easy for people. We want to be a helpful advocate and drive utility to the driver and you know, make their life more fun and enjoyable and easier.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I like what you mentioned there, the fact that like lots of even the EV owners who are still a minority in the US aren't going to regularly interface with DC fast charging. Many of them are able to charge at home, right? Ideally. And so when they do interface with DC fast charging, make it super simple. And like, if they don't want to download an app and, you know, spend 10 minutes of their life on that, then they don't have to. And I think that's really nice, honestly, for a lot of people. The other thing is you made these comparisons, right? The Tesla, they're in many ways the gold standard of the charging industry, not just in terms of the consumer experience, but also their cost model. I mean, at the consumer end, they have a lower price per kilowatt hour, but they're also able to deploy chargers relatively pretty quickly. and for really low cost. They integrate a lot of stuff. I mean, that's really hard to compete with, right? Tesla's the Goliath of a company, but what are some of the things you're doing to like try to, it sounds like you guys are kind of chasing that model, right? Of like having really good, cheap hardware that you can deploy really quickly. So what are some of the ways you're trying to copy some of that magic?
Yeah, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for the Tesla team. I used to work at SpaceX for 7 years as a mechanical engineer. So I know how intense and like first principle engineering they are. And I think it's good, you know, and kudos to the Tesla team for everything that they've accomplished and everything that they will accomplish. We know them decently well, and we talk to them and, you know, try to share ideas and are generally very supportive of what they're doing. We think, though, that there's still, and Elon and the Tesla team have said this publicly, there's still tons of unfilled capacity. They need so many EV charging stations. And very importantly, the ratio of vehicles in operation to the number of DC fast charging stalls is quickly growing. And yeah. What does that mean? It means there's way more cars being produced than charging stations being produced in a really bad way. So we need a lot more charging infrastructure to meet the needs of the driver community. And in general, yeah, I mean, like, we're always going to be trying to push down our cost curve, you know, make it more affordable for fueling retailers, make the business case make sense for the driver and our customers so that everybody's making money. Like, this is a really important point, which is if we want true decarbonization to happen and you want electric vehicles to be a thing, it needs to be an industry that just makes sense economically. Like, it can't be only workable if there's a bunch of government money funding it. Like, that's not sustainable. It has to where the driver's got an affordable rate, the person servicing the electrons is making money off of their invested capital, and the solutions providers are making money as a solution provider in the industry. And only then will the economic wheel turn. And that's good. You know, we want it to turn because then it's self-perpetuating and it'll grow fast. And this was one of the reasons I founded the company, which was I realized in roughly 2018 that the government wasn't moving fast enough. We needed private sector to lead on climate. And if we wanted to make climate technologies real in a capitalistic society, a business was the best way to go and propagate them. So kind of philosophical belief, I'll speak for myself. My philosophical belief is capitalism is a good thing and it can be used to go and propagate decarbonization technologies when done right. And I'm all about that because I think we need to do that quickly. That's our goal. And we try to make really good products that drive value to the whole industry and that are commercially viable on their own two feet.
Yeah, no, we're huge fans of obviously the free market and capitalism here.
Let's go free market.
Oh, let's go. But also admittedly, so many players have relied on subsidies and maybe in some ways irresponsibly, but it has helped a lot, including in charging, though obviously that impact was smaller with NEVI, right? NEVI was really a slower program that barely got off its feet before it was killed more recently. Did you guys at any point ever really integrate any idea of federal subsidies into your charging network, or is that not a problem for you guys?
Yeah, about a little bit less than 50% of our sites a little 50% of our sites have no government subsidies.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool, right?
I mean, no local, no state, nothing.
Yeah. And by the way, I should say like the true north is a purely commercial model and whatnot. But I think there's obviously a role, a bridge that the government can play. So I'm not saying it's bad across the board. You know, there's a bridge type approach that I think does make sense. And so, but I would say the goal should be to still have a commercially viable product that works on its own and that kind of can turn the economic wheel by itself. And so we're proud that honestly, more than 50% of our sites have no government subsidies. We were disappointed that we weren't able to continue the NEVI program. And my read is it might come back. It sounds like they're going to release new guidelines because technically it's very much like illegal for the government, the executive branch, to turn off a program that was administered by the congressional body.
And if they already had ongoing awards, right?
I think Secretary Duffy knows that. He's made multiple public announcements that they're going to keep going with it and they're going to release new guidelines. Who knows when it will get done? I think the one thing you can guarantee from the government is that they will go slow. So it might be administered in 2030 again. So we're not really banking on it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really hard thing with capital, right? And that is one of the dark sides of subsidies is while they can really help bootstrap things, you know, we live in a very short political climate in the U.S. just with our election seasons and headwinds and everything, and things change really quickly. And you can be left with a lot of uncertainty or holding the bag if you're waiting on grant money or subsidy money. And so obviously that's really difficult. the other thing is just, right, lots of the hardware, I mean, the EV makers face this too, is prohibitively really expensive, like battery costs. And much of that relies on, you know, what the government would call the foreign entities of concern, right? Like China, countries that we have national security interests against and are currently also in some ways tariffing. And so that, I imagine, makes it also, it's just one of many more challenges you have to face as a business owner and your team has to face. So how do you consider that too in this calculus of, like, obviously you guys provide a lot of unique value with the software and the integration you do, but you still have to get this hardware, you have to get power units and cabinets and stuff from someone. So what does that kind of look like in, you know, this challenging environment?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I'm going to give you a surprising answer, which is that the price reductions that are happening in our supply chains are far outpacing the impact of price increases from tariffs.
Oh, wow.
Like, for example, battery dollar per kilowatt hour pricing is just like literally falling off a cliff, the manufacturing ramp up in China. And essentially with the worst case tariffs that were in effect a couple weeks ago at this point.
Feels like a couple months.
Yeah, and it's like, I can never keep track of where all the tariffs are. I need like a real-time tariff stream like into my retina to stay on top of this stuff. But the last time I looked, they're much lower now. Before that, even at their highest point, the tariff costs, in addition to the normal battery cell costs, basically pushed it back to like 2023 pricing. That's how fast it's falling, which is like basically almost a halving of price over like about 2.5 years. So we're not too worried about it long term. This is one of the beautiful parts of why I love, you know, lithium. I think lithium ion it's got a lot of similar manufacturing scaling economies that like a transistor does or a semiconductor, where you can rapidly scale these things up and decrease the price curve. So that's great. I mean, just like solar is another great example, right? So the price of solar is just falling off the cliff.
Yep.
And that makes these, even with the inclusion of tariffs, that makes these types of energy technologies really viable in the American market still. So, the foreign entities of concern and all that stuff, it's a valid point still. And I think we're doing our best to try to onshore some of our supply chain, just because you don't know if there's going to be like a war with Taiwan and China, or like the APAC region shut down as a result. So we're trying to diversify, bring some of our supply chain back, and obviously hoping for the best. That doesn't happen. I think war is terrible and we should avoid it at all possible costs. It's a brutal thing that nobody should ever have to live through in their lives.
Yeah. And also, yeah, absolutely agree with that. And supply chains also, they do take some time to move. That said, though, like, you know, no one would doubt, yeah, China's capacity to scale, right? They've clearly demonstrated that. And as have some other countries, but really China, when it comes to producing things like solar or battery cells or lots of power electronics. And so in terms of onshoring that here, are you optimistic that like that's something that realistically could happen in a few years? I mean, there are efforts right in the US, and we're going to talk to some people on the show about, obviously there's battery IP and there's innovations here. There is some cell manufacturing here, but compared to China, it's such small potatoes right now. So are you optimistic that can make sense soon?
I was just talking to Felix Hammer. He's a pretty...
I love him. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. He's a great guy. I just met him recently and we were just having a conversation. He was like, he's just come back from a trip to China and he was like so blown away by how hardcore they are there. And it almost feels like fake when I go to work because I'm working so easily. And I think he's based out of Europe. I think that, I mean, the reason I'm saying all this is because I think that China is going to outwork us, and they are outworking us, and they're exceeding us technologically and in science in many different domains.
And they're controlling the supply with no regard for demand too. They have a manipulated market.
Exactly. And if we want to really truly reshore, we need to like change the culture and be much harder working in America, because they're currently operating at a pace that is even impressive in comparison to like NVIDIA, like the hardest working, most productive company currently in existence is getting quickly caught up by Huawei, you know? And if NVIDIA can't beat China, what are the rest of us going to do? So I think I have a very high degree of, you know, respect for the Chinese people. I think they work super hard, and I'm just driven internally and, you know, with our team here to try to work our butts off so we can be competitive at the global stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, even with high tariffs, global trade's pretty resilient. It makes sense in many cases to still get some of this stuff from China. And China is so far ahead in some of these areas and catching up so quickly in others. Nonetheless, you know, we're big believers here that from a national security standpoint, some of this stuff really should be built here. But hopefully that's done with, I mean, that's the kind of thing that, in my opinion, editorializing here does need some subsidies and stuff, because like you said, we're so much slower moving at the moment. And also, yeah, but work ethic, entrepreneurs like yourself, it's going to take a lot of smart people to get this going. But luckily, I think we do have a lot of smart people, the education system, all of those things we, of course, need to work on. But back to the, you know, the EV stuff, what are you like looking forward to? You mentioned the AI kind of integration with retailers. What other kinds of things are you looking forward to in this EV like charging landscape? Even though there's these headwinds in terms of consumer subsidies going away, the EV market is growing, both like not just Tesla, but all vehicle sales, even though Tesla has some brand damage now. Just so many manufacturers are getting into EVs, even if they're slow rolling it a little bit. People are buying EVs, they like them. And like you said, there's these there are these very obvious bottlenecks where, like, it's funny that I live here in Colorado and I notice it, like, where here it's like all right because we're adopting EVs a little slower than California, and so there's enough infrastructure. But I've traveled to California, I've traveled to the Bay Area and like LA, and like it's really grim there, which is weird. You'd think it'd be super great, but there's so many EV owners there, and there's just lines for chargers, right? There's this such an excess capacity to be built out. So what are some of the things you're looking to, I guess, forward to in terms of like deployment? Like, do you think it's just we got to get more stuff in the ground? Is it we've got to improve the technology? Like, is it all of the above? Like, what do you think are some of the like key priorities for Electric Arrow?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of trends that I'm watching. I'll just comment briefly that our company's building actually two charging stations in Colorado. So keep an eye out on that. And they're actually, you can already find them on our website. So they're coming, I think, Littleton, Colorado and Buena Vista, Colorado. So that's exciting. So for the drivers in Colorado, you'll be able to experience Electric Arrow shortly. Yeah. But in terms of like the macro trends, I mean, there's a bunch of cool stuff happening. And I completely agree with your premise that EV adoption is going to keep charging ahead. There's a lot of advantage. Everybody on the, I'm sure your audience knows the multitude of advantages that EVs have, but lower cost of maintenance, lower energy costs. The cars are, you know, software driven architectures. They can like drive themselves much easier than a gas equivalent. There's just so many awesome things happening in that space. I would say heavy duty is coming. It's really close. I'm super excited to see heavy duty trucks rolling around the country. Mm-hmm. That's a big, exciting trend. And on the charging front, it's going to mean we need a lot more megawatt level charging capable charging stations. And then when you think about the impact on the grid, what does that mean? It means you're going to need really big batteries to kind of buffer out the load. So we're, I think, as a business, very well positioned to have awesome market penetration for our product as the world starts to go into megawatt. I think autonomy, man, it's so close. It's right around the corner. Waymo has done a fantastic job, and I think Tesla's trying to really knock at that door. I'm excited about Rivian's announcements there. So autonomy is like, in my opinion, a sister of electric vehicles, and it's right there happening at the same time at an accelerated rate. I think wireless charging is another exciting one. I think there's, you know, it's actually something we talk about internally, just keeping an eye on it. And, you know, we're aware that the robotaxi is going to have I think it's like a 40 kW wireless inductive charger on it, which is quite interesting. I mean, that's going to have a lot of interesting impacts to the broader market. And that's just the beginning. You know, there's going to be a ton of other things behind that as well. So this is a really cool space to keep your eye on for sure. It's happening at such an accelerated rate. It's not quite as exciting as AI, but it's right there with AI, space technology, and vehicles. And I mean, in terms of the technologies that are going to shape the future, those are really the big three.
Yeah. And I mean, talk about also, like with AI, who is excited about this? And utilities, municipal, like energy companies, right? This is big dollars for them. And obviously with battery backing and stuff, you're able to do some kind of peak shaving and also enable more of this. I mean, in the megawatt trend, like, even though Tesla leads right now, I've just noticed, right? I mean, we have Silverado EVs and higher voltage vehicles with massive battery packs already on the road that aren't heavy duty. But like, you take a bunch of, theoretically, it's not going to really happen in the real world, but if it were, like, if five of them were to show up to a Tesla supercharging site, they would really overwhelm the capacity, even if the cabinets and the dispensers had the voltage to like charge them fully. Lots of the charging infrastructure we have right now is designed for the current era. It's not the next gen stuff. Like in China, they're showing the megawatt stuff. And I get into like LinkedIn fights all the time with people where they say, oh, charging is good enough. You know, it's good enough at 150 kilowatts. And I don't know. I mean, I'm curious what you think of this, but I feel like for the average person, there's still lots of people who aren't going to want to adopt an EV or won't make sense for them until they can almost have that gas level of convenience. And technologically, that may be possible. Like, I'm going to plug in and I'm going to get whatever, 500 kilowatts, whatever charging curve I need to get a full tank of range in like 10 minutes. That's what people will want.
I call this the law of the electric era, which is that peak power rates for EVs for charging have increased roughly 19% year over year since the launch of the Roadster program. I think it has no chance of slowing down until we get to, by my calculations, about 1.5 megawatts for a light duty vehicle, at which point you can basically charge in like 5 minutes. And it's essentially a gas station like experience at that point. So where does that come from? Well, the battery cell chemistries are able to absorb or charge quicker. And then the voltage of the powertrain are increasing, going from 400 volts on VDC on the electric powertrain for a Tesla. Most cars are now starting to go up to like 900 or 1,000. That, I think, will continue to go up. There's a big push basically in power electronics for higher and higher blocking voltage levels. And for our battery pack, we use an inverter, for example, that has like 1500 volt VDC voltage, direct current bidirectionality on it, which is like super good for architectural reasons. So the cars benefit, the drivers benefit. And in general, I think cars as a result will go to higher voltage levels and therefore be able to charge faster. So the technology is supporting it and consumer demand is supporting it.
Yeah.
And I completely agree it's going to happen. And I don't know how long it'll take, but generally it's coming.
Yeah, and super nerdy, but I imagine the back end would benefit, right? From a much higher voltage, whatever, buses and lower current, right? You'd have much lower heat losses. And so there's probably a lot of optimizations you guys can get there. The more, you know, speculative self-driving, other stuff, right? That would require, like, Tesla's trying the inductive charging with CyberCab. We'll see what that looks like. But obviously lots of physics challenges there. But if we're going to fall asleep in our cars and they're going to drive us overnight somewhere, you will need charging robots or inductive charging or something else. So that's something else that, you know, I'm sure you guys are thinking of and a problem to be solved. And yeah, it's a lot of exciting stuff. Never a dull moment. I love your optimism and just the power, honestly, of entrepreneurship here and putting a lot of smart minds to work. Really respect what you guys are doing.
Thanks. I appreciate it and love your work as well. And you know, I would encourage everybody to be optimistic. It's so much more fun and life's so much more malleable when you have an optimistic perspective on things. Like, and you can go and create and do anything you want if you have, you know, that self-belief and that self-determination. So it just leads to a better life. And it's also, just more fun and more inspiring.
Absolutely. And if people want to try an electric aero station, we'll link your site. They can go in the driver tab and see all the ones you've got deployed so far. Thanks so much for your time. All right, that's it for this installment of Directly Current. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I've been your host, Max Patton. Thank you again to Quincy, Lee, and everyone at Electric Era for making this happen. And we have another very, very exciting guest in industry working on a very fundamental component of EVs as our next guest. I'm looking forward to it. In the meantime, you can check out all of the work we're doing at evpolitics.org. Links in the description, as well as, of course, to Quincy's info and Electric Era. Here at the American EV Jobs Alliance, it's a very important season. Of course, we're in full legislative session. The Senate is looking at this reconciliation bill. It's looking big and beautiful, or depending on your perspective, neither of those things. And it's getting messy. We are worried, very, very worried about the subsidies and the tax credits from both the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act that have made so much of the EV industry possible and catalyzed so much activity. Many of those subsidies are on the chopping block, but we think at the American EV Jobs Alliance, they're very important. We think the jobs are important. We think American industry is at risk. So AmericanEVJobs.org is the link for this activation campaign we're doing, link in the description, where we have a very fancy tool. Just put in your zip code. And if you're in the right district or state with a senator or house member who is affected by this, and it's a lot of those red states, then please, please follow up with them. There's an automated, very easy way to basically write a letter to them. You can send this link to your family and activate them as well. The more they hear from constituents, the more it's going to weigh on them, because we want these things to have a political cost. We're going to keep hammering this point home. The EV industry will nonetheless charge on, but we really think, especially here in America, it needs help, because I don't want to have to learn Mandarin. So thank you so much for listening. Please do subscribe to our continuing episodes. I'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
My fact this week is that Andy Warhol would regularly have his wig cut by a barber and then return the following month wearing a new, longer wig.
Hello, we are No Such Thing as a Fish. We are a British podcast all about facts and trivia and everything interesting in the whole wide world.
We cover everything from pufferfish rectums to the moon to mangrove forest. What else do we do, James?
Oh, well, what about the fact that in 1936, a robot in California shot its inventor in the head?
There you go. If you're intrigued to hear more, peppered with some bad puns and some crude jokes, then check us out. We are No Such Thing as a Fish.